This is episode number 197 of the Well-Fed Women podcast. Welcome to Well-Fed Women. I'm your co-host, Noelle Tarr, a nutritional therapy practitioner and a certified personal trainer, and I'm joined by my bestie, Stephanie Ruper, author of the best-selling book, Sexy by Nature. On the show, we provide moderately amusing banter, authentic, unfiltered conversations relating to nutrition, fitness, mindset, and body image, and offer empowering advice for women from women. While you're listening, please keep in mind that the information on this podcast is intended to provide helpful and informative material and should not be used to diagnose or treat disease. We are so excited to have you here. So now let's have some fun. So I do hear some kids frolicking around. Where are these kids from and why are they on the college campus?
Oh, God.
Oh, it sounds like you really enjoy the children.
Yeah, so this is the second and is probably not the last podcast I'm recording today where I have to apologize for the kids frolicking beneath me. So I live on Oxford University campus, and Oxford is full of like day schools for boys mostly because of the patriarchal history of the place. But it's and then they every weekday afternoon from 1:30 until about 3:42. kids play football or soccer outside my window, and there's nowhere else. There's no quieter place I can go to record. This is as quiet as it gets. So it's if I have to record something between this window, then we can occasionally hear some frolicking. So my apologies, but hopefully it brings you more joy than irritation.
I think it'll hopefully bring more joy. At the same time, I have my child running around screaming as well. So all the kids right now, all the kids. Oh, just right
there
on cue.
There you go.
Right on cue. Hey, also, I need to apologize. So in my office, I've been getting some comments, quite a few actually. Okay, so in my office, it is like I'm in a downstairs room, and that is works great for us. But I have my desk is flanked by two dog kennels. Okay, so I have two very energetic boxers. When I'm recording, they go in their kennels. Well, my 9-year-old has really picked up this habit of doing this guttural snore. And it has shown up in the podcast in the previous, like maybe last month, it got real bad. So she's no longer here with me in the office. I can trust her pretty well to stay in her bed out in the living room. The younger one is sitting here, but she does not have that snore yet. So as many of you know who have dogs with short faces, it gets bad. Dog snoring is bad. So some people were like, is that a person snoring? Or what's going on? Are you like recording and somebody's sleeping? No, it was my dog. It was my boxer. So apologies. Apologies. Okay, so here's the problem. When I'm recording, I have on headphones. So I have on like things that actually completely cover my ear. So I can hear Stephanie perfectly, and I can hear myself sort of talk. I mean, I don't really turn up my voice that much. I have a really hard time actually hearing the ambient noise that's happening around me. I can hear screams like my daughter, but I can't hear the snoring. So yeah, sorry. I would have stopped it, which would have been me yelling at her, trying to get her to wake up and change positions, but this is life.
Okay.
My dogs.
Okay.
Yeah, y'all. I'm sorry. This is just how this house is set up, so we got to roll with it. So what's going on with you in Oxford? Anything new? Are you just doing a lot of the same?
Yeah, so I'm not working on my dissertation at all, which is basically done anyway. Whatever. When people ask me and I'm like, oh yeah, whatever, they're like, their jaws just drop. They're like, you just whatever your dissertation. I'm like, yeah, whatever, it'll be done, it's fine.
I feel like that happens after time though with most school related things. It's like you feel super energized and excited, and then after a few years you get more cynical.
Well, no, I don't mean I'm cynical about it per se, but rather like, yeah, I'm pretty much done. It's going fine. You know, there's a lot of panic around here, and I'm just like, man, it's fine.
Yeah. Are you ever a panic person when it comes to deadlines and stuff like that?
Well, I mean, I do everything ahead of time because I'm a deeply panicked person when it comes to deadlines. So I do everything ahead of time to avoid it, which is something that I have been doing assiduously with my philosophy podcast. So we're recording a bit ahead of time, but right now it's like right before the launch, and I am trying to avoid the panic. You know, I'm trying to remind myself that I set my own deadlines, A, and B, that everything is fine and unfolding well. And it's going really well. And I recently made my Instagram account live, and this is October. So now it's definitely live and been active, and it's been really fun. And I've been enjoying it. And I do that thing where you like obsessively check how many likes you get.
Like, oh, I've been there, done that. Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I did that last night.
Yeah.
And so, this is all new for me, but it's really exciting. And some people from the Paleo for Women account have already started like following me as Stephanie Ruper, and that's how you find me on Insta and Facebook. And it's just my name. So, join me, fams, if you want, but if you don't, that's cool too.
Yeah, I don't ever really get like caught up in the I do get caught up in the panic, but I get caught up in my own panic. Does that make sense? Okay, yeah. So it's like I create my own panic. It's not like I feed off of other people's. I more, especially when it came to school-related things, which eventually transferred into, you know, career-related things and then running my own business-related things, I create my own panic. And sometimes I have to step back and be like, oh, this was self-imposed. Like, it's cool, you can flex, but in school – a lot of that isn't self-imposed, so you have to kind of – oh, it's so funny how when you're young and getting your bachelor's degree and it's like you're 18 or 19 and you're like, life is so stressful, and it feels like, you know, all of a sudden you have all of these things, these requirements of you, and a lot of times you're also doing athletics and it's just a lot going on. And then you get out of college and you're like, man, that was the life. Why didn't I do that more? I really enjoyed my college experience, but I do sometimes regret not enjoying it more, like taking it all a little too seriously, especially when you're 18. I mean, you're still a kid, 18, 19, 20, you know, that you're still a kid. So I just wish I would have panicked less, enjoyed more. But not to say that I don't enjoy my life now. It's such a cool time of your life that you get to do a lot of things and have independence, but not a lot of financial burden, so to speak. I mean, you're sometimes still having help, but you're also, you know, in a phase where everybody's kind of scrapping it. And I don't know. It was just a cool time. I really enjoyed my college experience.
Yeah, mine was chill.
Yeah. Fun. So I want to share something, and this is going to be my update. I'm trying to get my thoughts together about it. I had a really nasty experience at a public place, and I'm more so looking for solidarity from our community, but I had a pretty tough experience with another mother who I did nothing to and like just came over and started. I'm not going to get into the details because that gives her way too much power and she wasn't worth that. But we were at a little
savage.
Yeah, no, it was bad. We were at a little play place area and our kids were interacting and I was interacting with her kid and talking to her kid very kindly, but she somehow took it as I was, I don't know, trying to control. I don't know. It was a huge miscommunication. And as I was leaving, she literally came over to me and was like, threw profanities around and told me like never to like just totally degraded me, right? Like every which way she could pick me apart, she could. And I had a moment, I had to process it all. It's a lot for me when somebody is like confrontational to me and like attacking. I'm not very, like, I'm not on my feet. Like, I can, if it's something I've been thinking about, like, I can really communicate well. But if you're, like, you come up to me and you say something really nasty, like, about me, like, I don't know what to say to you. Like, I'm like, is this, like, in my head, I'm going, is this really happening? So I had a situation like that happen. And honestly, I'm going to be truthful. This is like the first time I've really had a toddler Stella where she is very independent and fun and running around. And so this was like one of my first experiences really taking her out in the public and letting her just kind of like run freely on this little play place area. And it was really fun and I enjoyed it. And left there and, you know, was attacked. And then I tried to go back over to her and I was like, I don't know why she thought I said that to her kid. Like, I obviously need to just go communicate and say like, hey, this didn't happen. So I was like, hey, can we talk about this, you know, like adults? Can you not please, you know, name call me? I just want to talk about this. And then it just set her off again. And she just, again, started personally attacking me. And it ended with her, you know, running away and not letting me say anything. And I was like, okay. So I just felt like totally blindsided by the fact that, okay, so here's the real issue is apparently, you know, we moms are very protective of our kids, but we also are very judgmental. And I feel like we are so quick to judge what other women are doing. And I am a person who is always going to teach my kid to respect authority. And even if I think that, you know, if Stella goes and hits another kid in the face and that other kid's mom is like, hey, sweetie, don't do that. You know, we don't hit. I will be like, yes, Stella, please respect authority. Like, do not hit her, right? So even if it was a situation like that, you know, I have a certain way of doing things and I want my kid, we definitely have boundaries, but I want my kid to respect authority, end of story. And it was so jarring for me to experience this because I was like, is this what mom life is like, right? And I've experienced a lot of the shame and the judgment from, like, what choices you make. And we're going to get into that today, which is, you know, there's a lot of craziness. If you think there's a lot of judgment in nutrition, it's 18 million times worse when you become a mother and it's about the decisions that you make for your kid. And it was so jarring to me to be like, this is what mom life is, right? Is this like, this is what it's like to interact with other moms who apparently think that you are doing something wrong or think that you're doing something in a different way from what they would have done. And it was just so overwhelming to me. And you know me, I'm a compassionate and I try to be a very kind person and that's what I lead with. And for somebody not to lead with that was very, very overwhelming to me. And so I had to like, you know, message a bunch of my friends and be like, yo, this is what just happened. Like I was shaking when I left because I was like, you've got like, this is not right. I was like, this is not right. And it was in front of my kid. You know, she said some really disgusting things like right in front of Stella. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Essentially, what it all boiled down to is she thought I was yelling at her kid, which I wasn't. But she thought I had somehow disciplined or yelled at her kid. And that's actually not at all what had happened. And she waited till the very last moment when I was trying to walk out to come and call me a really, you know, some dirty names and then literally ran away so that I couldn't say anything to her and say like, what are you even talking about? And so I had to message some of my friends and be like, yo, is like, what do you do? Like, do you just not interact with other people's kids? Like, this seems like an anomaly, but like, this is my first experience with Stella having fun with another kid and or interacting with another kid and me, you know, interacting with somebody else's kid and I get like blasted. And I know that she, obviously, it was some sort of a pride issue with her or, you know, there was other things involved, which I'm not going to, you know, bring up, but it was some sort, she was obviously hurting in some way and took it out on me, right? And so I get that. Like, we talk about that a lot, like redirected anger and emotion. And so I get that. It wasn't really an issue with me. It was an issue with her. And so but it's still hard, right? It's still hard. And when you're trying to do everything right and the children are involved, it's like, holy crap, this is a really dirty and ugly thing. and so it was just really, really overwhelming to me. And, you know, folks, this is all I want to say is like, we have to lead with kindness and we have to assume positive intent. And I know that there are some creepers out there and there are creepy people and we have to protect our kids from them, right? Like, I'm not saying don't like go with your gut if you feel like something isn't right. Like, that's not what I'm saying. But I think that when it comes to other mothers, we have to lead with kindness and we have to assume that whatever somebody else is doing or their intentions, they're positive, because we're all like, and this is the never ending thing that I keep saying, but like, we all have to be in this together, right? We all have to kind of be in each other's team, in each other's side, whether that comes to different decisions. As long as we can all say like, oh, you parent a different way, or oh, you make a different choice, I'm going to, like, that's okay. You know, that's okay. Just like, oh, you're going to eat a high carb diet or a low carb diet? Like, cool, do you. Like, what is the point in tearing someone down and shaming somebody for a decision that they have decided to make for themselves? And that has to also go into our entire lives as moms, because I think that nobody goes and has kids. Not many people. 99% of people don't have kids. And then decide not to love their kids, right? And not to try to make the best decisions for them. And certainly there are some terrible situations where really bad things happen, but that's just not the majority of the situation. So if you've, you know, heard the things that we're talking about, especially in this series, but also heard the things that, you know, we're talking about taking shame and guilt and not judging each other for, you know, Beth's episode was a powerful episode about her breastfeeding struggles. Claire and I's episode about postpartum depression and anxiety was like, the feedback from that has been tremendous. And I feel like it's finally clicking with people, like, oh, like, other people are struggling and I don't understand that, or other people make other decisions and I may not understand that, but all I can do is really support them through that. And that's kind of like where I think we have to move as a culture is, yeah, leading with love and kindness, but also being okay with being in a space where somebody might have a different opinion than you. Like, I feel like so many of the issues that arise are from this sort of intolerance to, like, you've chosen something else, or you believe in something else, and I just can't, like, that, that's unacceptable. And I get it that there are some really heated and charged issues, but if we can't lead with kindness and be kind to people and say, I know you're probably making this decision because that's what you believe is the best and you have good intentions and we may disagree, that doesn't mean we have to, like, name call and oh, personally attack each other or argue on Facebook about it. Like, you're actually going to change somebody's opinion. Like, good luck with that. So I don't know. We have to come to the understanding that most people have good intentions. If they don't, get them out of your life, right? Like, don't, it's fine. Like, bye. That's it. But most people have good intentions and they believe the things they do, and they are doing the things that they make the choices that they do because they believe, and it is their opinion, that that's the best choice. And so you have to lead with compassion. I'm so sick of this, like, always assuming negative intent. And I just feel like it's unfortunately so much more pervasive in mom life than it even is in the nutrition space, in paleo. So sorry for the ramble, but it was just like I think it was a moment for me, you know. It was definitely like a life-changing experience where it was like, oh gosh, I don't ever want to be that person, you know. Who knows? I could have been if my life had gone a specific way, if I hadn't have come to a lot of realizations and gotten a lot of hard lessons early on about my health and nutrition and bodies and all that kind of stuff. I really feel like my whole life was shaped through a lot of those experiences that I had, and it can definitely be applied to so many other areas. So that's my update.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was a little bit of a tough week. And you know how when you experience something like that, it affects your sleep.
Yeah.
That's happened too. So it's just annoying. And it's not even like if you're not even trying to think about it or whatever. It's just a sort of stressful thing that impacts your ability to just be at peace and rest. So all the things, it's annoying, but we got to do better, folks. Like, and I know the people who listen to this podcast are not that person. But you know what it made me think about, Steph, was, you know how there are people who comment really nasty things and attack you when you're a blogger? And
yeah, it's a thing.
It's a thing. It made me be like, oh, that's who I'm putting a face to those comments. Like, that's who's doing this kind of stuff. And it just, it was, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that there's still people out there like that. I mean, I'm sure you still get nasty comments on old blog posts that you wrote, and I do too. And just some of the messages and stuff that I get, I'm like, really?
Yeah, you just got to brush them off, you know.
Yeah, and I think we probably at this stage in our life have gotten good at that with the online stuff, especially.
Yeah, it helps when you have other people screen it for you first.
Oh, I do remember that. I do remember us having to go through that experience. You were like, I'm going to have somebody else check the email first. And it's protection. Yep. Why? Why do you even need to see it? That's the whole point. It's like, why do I even need to see this? So checking before bed is just never a good idea.
Never.
Never.
Ever.
Somehow I always come across something.
I always mess it up before I go to sleep.
Right before I'm going to bed, I'm like, what? Yeah. Oh, this online world, how complicated it's made for us. But also how wonderful it is to benefit from it. So that's the stuff. Hey, let's jump into questions. I have a quick announcement before we do. Prep Dish, who is a longtime sponsor of ours, is continuing to sponsor the podcast, and we are so thankful to Allison and to Prep Dish and the service she provides. This is a really, really great time to start experimenting with meal planning. I was just talking to my best friend the other day, and she was like, oh, I just hate the meal planning process. I don't even really enjoy cooking, but I do it. You know, it's something I do every night. And if I could just get somebody else to do that for me, if I made a ton of money, like that's what I would have, you know, somebody do for me. And I'm like, whoa, it doesn't have to be that much money. Like, there are services that are not expensive at all that can do all the meal prep work for you, all your grocery lists. It's stuff you're familiar with. It's recipes that are easy, and you can like outsource that, y'all. If you have better things to do and you can eat things that are, you can do more efficiently and make the better use of your time, like outsource the meal planning. And that is what Prep Dish is for. PrepDish.com/wellfed. You'll get 2 free weeks of all of her meal plans. So she does gluten-free and paleo meal plans. You'll get them both, so you can decide what you want to do. And gluten-free doesn't mean like, gluten-free and paleo doesn't mean, as everybody knows, it doesn't mean like bland and not a lot of flavor. Like, there are gluten-free still includes a lot of grains, and it's just like if your family members aren't on board with that, they probably won't notice, to be quite honest. So the meal plans are beautiful. They're easy to follow. The recipes are easy to follow. You will not regret it. And just get that 2 weeks for free and test it out and see how it is and see how it goes. And I'm sure you'll fall in love with it. So PrepDish.com/wellfed. All right. Question number one is from Elena. Hello, ladies. I've been a longtime listener, and I really love the movement towards discussing postpartum issues and experiences. My question is in regards to infant sleep and dealing with postpartum insomnia. I know that you've discussed insomnia and sleep on the podcast, and I just want to hear more about it. My daughter is almost 6 months old and is a terrible sleeper. She wakes every 1 to 2 hours, falling back to sleep easily. But nevertheless, the pattern is very disruptive to an adult sleep cycle. I'm starting to feel like I'm completely losing my mind, and I'm very concerned about the long-term health effects of going months with 4 to 6 hours of disrupted sleep per night. She gives a little background. She's 34 with her first child. She works full-time as a geneticist. Oh, commutes an hour both ways, which amounts to 11-hour work days, and alarms going off before 5 a.m. 8 weeks after my daughter was born, my father unexpectedly passed. And the stress of that caused a major drop in milk supply, along with ugly bouts of postpartum depression for which I am being treated. My husband does take her 2 to 3 nights a week, which is awesome, but it's just not enough. Even when the baby does sleep, I'm lying awake in anticipation of her getting up, resulting in postpartum insomnia. I've totally been there. I'm torn between what I believe is best for my child, i.e. not doing cry it out, and my own survival. Noelle, how did you finally get Stella to sleep? And what do I do to support my physical and mental health if I never sleep again? You're going to sleep again. Yeah.
One piece that has been very important, you know, is what Noelle just said. You will sleep again. I have suffered from really severe insomnia at various points in my life. And my mother always said, and she was correct, it was very hard for me to believe it, this sleep does come, right? And this time you're not just hindered by, you're hindered by your own now psychological, you know, warpings and tendencies related related to whether or not you're going to be able to sleep or anticipating when your daughter is going to be getting up, that sort of thing. But also, of course, the actual fact that this happens. And really, I know that this is going to sound trite, but for me, the possibility of my sleep being disruptive is also very anxiety inducing. And it's the kind of thing that will prevent me from sleeping, right? Wanting to sleep or needing to sleep is the exact thing that prevents me from being able to sleep. And so there's a few things, a few like thoughts that I have been able to use to help me with that. And the first is letting go of my attachment to sleep. And I know that this is a really hard thing to think. If you know how important sleep is for your health, right? And you know how important sleep is for you, like feeling good and managing your depression or your energy levels and your work all day, every day, then that's going to increase the pressure that you put on yourself in order to sleep. And I know that sleep matters, but it's important to note that for certain periods of time, like the human body can handle sleeplessness. It's not going to have any long-term detrimental effects against your health, probably. can't make any promises, but probably wouldn't. And you can, through this period, be okay. You can be okay, right? I think a big piece of our panic about insomnia is the fear that we won't be okay. You can be okay. You are okay. And this is just a temporary thing. So that's one thing you can think about, is that physiologically, you will be fine. And mentally, you can also be fine with a lower amount, a disrupted amount of sleep. And again, I know that it's challenging because my anxiety is always triggered by lack of sleep. And I know that Noelle's is too. But by constantly reinforcing the fact that you can be okay, you can help mitigate this. A second thing is, another thing I think might sound trite is the power of positive thinking. Okay, so what I mean by this is, and this has been very helpful for me recently, is refusing to let your thoughts be co-opted by your experiences of anxiety or pain or worry or what have you, right? And so it's very, very easy to let anxiety or depression train run away with itself, right? It gets going from something very small, perhaps the fact of your sleeplessness, perhaps the fact of the perhaps because you're going to be woken up very soon, perhaps any of these things. And then it sort of runs away with itself and it becomes a more deeply felt thing and you can have more intense worries, right? It all just sort of snowballs. And what is best for me is to cut that off at the source when I even see it beginning to happen and reinforce the fact that I am in control of what I'm thinking. And in that sense, to some degree, in control of what I'm feeling. I don't have to experience insomnia right now, right? I don't have to panic. I can simply refuse to think the things that are making me panic because they are part of one narrative, but I can choose another narrative. And like I mentioned before, you can choose a narrative in which it's okay that you're not getting a lot of sleep right now. And you're just going to have patience for yourself and your family as you get through this. And it's going to be hard, but it's okay. So these are all things that I would personally do when you're trying to manage your mental space, some things to think about. And for the stuff about managing your baby sleep, I'm gonna pass that mic.
Yeah, I think that Steph's advice is really great for people who aren't necessarily don't have the baby involved. I think that can definitely help, but it is a different animal when you have like another human being that you're trying to take care of, and it's harder to change your thoughts because you're just so, and I think that this is some of the neurological stuff going on. I'm going to be honest. I think that this is some postpartum depression still existing, and it is some postpartum anxiety. And so this is a lack of sleep issue, but it's also a brain chemistry issue, which we have to be very aware of. And I'm so happy that you're getting treated. First and foremost, Steph and I are so happy that you are getting treatment for that, whether that be prescription pills or you're getting regular therapy. that is what you need, right? And that is first and foremost. And I feel like you have made that decision because you know you have to put yourself first. And so I commend you on that. That is a hard thing to do, and it's very brave. Keep getting treatment. Stay in that treatment. I feel like what you're experiencing is not normal. It's not normal insomnia. You have another human being that you have to take care of that is disrupting your sleep. And it is unlike anything else in that you're not in control. Like, you can do as much as you can to try to do all the things that we've talked about so many different episodes about sleep, about the environment and blocking the blue light and drinking the tea and trying to, you know, change your mindset around it. But at the end of the day, your infant is still waking up on the hour every hour, and it is so disruptive, and you're not in control. That's essentially the whole situation, is you are not in control of, even if you finally get to the point where you can fall asleep, 30 minutes later, this kid wakes up again. And then you have to get up and actually care for the kid and go to work full time, and you can't like nap during the day. So you're in a space where you are at rock bottom, and I can feel it. And like, I can almost go back there. And I think that this is, if you're looking for validation to try to move forward in a way that is best for you, you have it from me and you have it from Stephanie. Like, we are team. Do what is right for you, because that is essentially what's going to be right for your baby and your family. You know, you are going to be more present. You're going to be able to take care of your kid better. You're going to be healthier long term if you can make some decisions and shifts that help your baby sleep better. And in the holistic community, it is very hard because there's a lot of judgment around what decision you make and how you decide to help your child sleep. And it is, if you're looking for the magic solution in which your child peacefully drifts off to sleep without a hiccup, and it is the best, you're not going to find it. There is no golden ticket. There is no one specific way. Every child is different. Every family is different. Every situation is different. And so I have been very careful about talking about what I chose to do with sleep, because there is a lot of judgment around it. I'm going to talk about it a little bit more. I'm going to be a little bit more open about it, but I want everybody to know that if you chose to do a different way, I don't have any judgment for you. I don't have any judgment for people who do Cry It Out. I have very wonderful friends who have raised amazing children, and they did Cry It Out. They did a modified version of Cry It Out, and their kids are great and healthy and wonderful and have great sleep, you know, situations. And so I don't have any judgment. If that's what you decide, I don't know your situation. You know, I know a couple of my friends who decided to do that were, you know, in a very tough situation. And so I know that desperation. I've been there. And I don't have any judgment. So yes, I think it's really important to try to get treatment first and foremost. If you're seeing a therapist, which I think this is probably part of your care, I would talk to her or him about this, specifically postpartum anxiety, because that's what you're experiencing. You're experiencing anxiety as a part of postpartum depression, and it can be completely debilitating, and like, you can't even process. I think you're at the point where you can't even process, and the thoughts that come out of your head are just not, it's not like, no human should have to experience it. So get the treatment. Second of all, just the initial thing. If your child is 6 months old, waking up every 1 to 2 hours, this is just my personal opinion. I think that there is some sort of sleep association here. So when she wakes up, what are you doing to get her back to sleep? She's only having one sleep cycle. And apparently now when she gets through that sleep cycle, babies actually wake up constantly through the night. And that's very normal. My kid still does. We do. Adults do. We wake up and sometimes we don't remember it, but all of us, we wake up in the middle of sleep cycles, switch positions, go to the bathroom, whatever. And so if a baby goes through a sleep cycle, has this sort of light awakening, and then isn't able to get back to sleep because something is not there that they've created a sleep association with, like rocking or bouncing or a passy or whatever, they will cry and not be able to get back to sleep. So there's some sort of, this is my first recommendation, figure out what the sleep association is and get on a plan to maybe break that. And it's not going to be hard. It's not going to be too overwhelming. It's just something that you're going to have to move forward with. With Stella, and I talked about this in my episode with Claire, I had gotten to the point about 4 months. She was 4 months old. And I got to the exact point where you were, where it was like I was done. I just was at such a breaking point, and all I was doing was I talked about this a lot, but all I was doing was bouncing on this ball, right? And I'm very thankful to some of my friends, specifically Liz Wolf, who is a pretty big advocate of aware parenting, and she had talked me through some of the stuff, and I decided, and she had connected me with somebody. Her name is Eliza Parker, and I'll link to her in the show notes. Her website is consciousbaby.com. But her basic thought process and the basic idea of aware parenting is it is okay to cry. It is okay to cry. Babies have to process a lot of emotion, a lot of trauma. Being a baby is very hard, okay? You're come out of the womb, you're thrust into cold and hot and hunger, and it's terrifying. It's a lot for them, right? And so they have to process their emotions. And I think that what a lot of us, our knee-jerk reaction to do is when a baby is crying is to immediately stop it. And there are certain situations where that makes sense, right? And especially early on, it's a lot. But once you kind of start to move through that newborn phase, and there's little things that you can do. Once you start to move through that newborn phase, your kid is going to have to process a lot of stuff just like adults do, right? We process things, we process emotions as adults, and we have ways of dealing with stress. Sometimes it's a really big cry, right? Sometimes we just need to cry. If somebody came up to you and said, oh, no, 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 don't cry, don't cry, don't cry, and that's exactly what you needed, like that's not helpful, right? You just need to release that emotion with a good cry. I have processed many things with just a one big good cry. We do other things, right? Like we go to yoga, or we have deep breathing, or we have some mental exercises, or we go for a run, or we go for a walk outside. We have a ways of dealing with stress. Babies don't have that. So they really process things through crying. And when I was at 4 months postpartum with her, I was in this scenario where we would always try to stop her crying, and we'd always try to get her to sleep with the bouncing. And I lost it and was sobbing and held her and said, I can't bounce anymore. My back is killing me. And we both sat there and we cried together. And it was the most healing thing. I think it was a pivotal point in myself as a mom, because we both processed that. She screamed. And it wasn't a scream of like something was wrong. Everything was right, but she needed to release some things. And she was screaming. I was not bouncing her anymore. I wasn't trying to stop it. She went on for like 10, 15 minutes and then fell asleep, and fell asleep hard. And so from that moment on, I was like, I am no longer going to do all the things and spin myself up to try to stop her from crying or to try to get her to sleep. And from there, long story short, it was just moving towards that, always seeing where I want, what did I want my sleep situation to be? And that may sound selfish, but I am just trying to empower you to do what is right for you. Yes, you are always going to take your child's health and well-being into account. And I don't ever want you to do anything that feels wrong to you. But at some point, you have to make a decision to take action and move forward with doing something that has to be done so that there can be more balance in the household and taking care of yourself. And you are an equal part in this relationship with your kid. And so for me, it was always, where do I want to see her sleeping in 8, 12, 16, you know, at 16 months old? What is our end goal? And so I saw that end goal and decided to make slow shifts towards that goal. And there's a link to in the show notes. I did I think you'd be a great candidate for a holistic sleep coach, somebody who can walk you through how to figure out what the sleep association is, how to get longer chunks of sleep. Because once you can start getting 3 to 4 hours solid at a time, your life will change dramatically. You cannot survive on 1 hour increments. It's just not, you just can't do it. So she can help you with that. That moment forward, I sat there and said, okay, never bouncing again. So that night when I put her down, I let her cry in my arms. She fell right asleep, passed out. Took about 15 minutes as opposed to the hour to 2 hours my husband would spend downstairs bouncing on a ball, watching movies on Netflix, trying to get her to go to sleep. And we transferred to the bassinet. She was in a co-sleeper, which that was a lifesaver for us. And we would sleep, and we started to get a little bit more sleep and a little bit more sleep. And I had to move forward with, you know, every little change you do with kids, especially when it comes to sleep, is terrifying. Because once you have some sort of sleep, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to disrupt this and it's all going to be over. It is not. You will get sleep again. This is just a phase, and a lot of the little changes that you go through only are going to last for a little period of time. And so then it was, all right, I'm going to transfer her to the bassinet on her back, not in a co-sleeper. And we had to process that, and we had to move through that. And I was okay with her crying. I was 100% okay with her crying. Crying is normal. She was processing a lot. She was processing change. I was right there to support her. Did I keep picking her up and bringing her out and holding her? No, I didn't. I put her in the crib, and I was right there laying beside her, and I would talk to her, and she would fall asleep. And so then it was, you know, moving towards, okay, I'm going to nurse her to sleep, and if I transfer her and she doesn't, and she wakes up, like, I'm not going to pick her right back up immediately and have her fall asleep again in my arms. I'm going to transfer her and I'm going to lay there with her. And that was kind of a big jump. That was, you know, at 5.5 months. And so essentially she was going through this stage of trying to flip on her stomach, and she was just having a really hard time getting comfortable. She wasn't, like, when babies start to sleep on their stomach, it's amazing. And she hadn't quite figured that out yet. And so I actually sat there with her for probably like an hour while she just... she would cry, but then she'd stop, and she was rolling, and she was trying to figure out how to get herself comfortable. And I did not pick her up, but I said, yes, yeah, we are going to figure this out together. Like, I'm going to be your support, you, but you've got to figure out, I can't keep holding you while you sleep. We can't, like, we have to move forward with, at some point I've got to be able to transfer you to the crib, and you've got to be able to get comfortable and go to sleep. And so then the next big step was, all right, we want her in the crib. Like, this is our long-term goal, is for her to sleep safely and soundly in her crib. And at 6 months, we switched to putting her on her back in the crib, letting her put herself, not letting her put herself to sleep. Sometimes she would just stay right asleep, but putting her down and allowing her to flip on her belly on her own and stay asleep. And that took a few nights, and we did that. And all while this was happening, you know, I was weaning down the nursing sessions. She would sometimes nurse at 11, 2, and let's say like 5. Then she kind of dropped the 11. So if she could prove to me that she had dropped the 11, and she did that for a week or two, if she woke back up at 11, I wouldn't feed her. I didn't feed her. And this is where a big change happened. I started taking a breath. I was laying right there. I could hear her crying. And I would say, I'm going to see if she can work through this. A lot of times she worked right through it in a couple minutes and went right back to sleep. And if I would have picked that child up, she gets so easily stimulated. If I would have picked her up, we would have been up for hours. So yeah, is that like the most perfect? Is that even what, like, I'm not talking about aware parenting. I'm talking that, you know, that is very specific. Crying arms is okay. Supporting your kid while they cry. That was very empowering for me. But this was me creating a plan that was right for my family. And I think that that is where there's a lot of confusion, because there's attachment parenting and ride parenting and aware parenting and cry it out. And, you know, the no cry sleep solution. And there's all these books and all these theories and all these ways that you can do things. And I don't think you have to choose. There's not one way that is absolutely way better than the other. Of course, everybody will tell you that, and it's paralyzing because you're like, well, I should be doing it this way, but this is working better for my kid. No, there is no one specific way. There's one way that works for your kid and your family. And so I encourage you to pull little things from what resonates with you, and then do the things that works for you and what you feel comfortable with and what you know your kid can handle and process at that time, right? I wouldn't have made these changes at 2 months or at 3 months. And if she had woken up still at 11 o'clock at 3 months old, I would have fed her. But now that we are at 6 months and I could see that she was sleeping through the night really consistently, she would, you know, wake up for that first feeding at 2 or 3. I made a pact with my husband, and I said, all right, she's now 6 months old. She's proven to us that she doesn't need 3 feedings a night. If she wakes up before 12, I'm not feeding her. It's just not happening. So she woke up maybe once at like 11, didn't feed her, went back to sleep, never happened again. Then that happened with the last feeding. And the last feeding that I had to drop was only that middle one, which she did on her own. She basically took a week or two, maybe really didn't wake up at all for a couple nights, maybe up to a week. And then that happened 2 weeks. And I said, all right, never again. We're done nursing at night. Mostly because I had such an oversupply that I knew if I nursed her at night, that it would just really, I had worked so hard to get my supply back down, or, you know, to work through that. And I said, all right, we're not nursing anymore. And of course I did when she was teething and stuff like that. It's not like I didn't work with my kid, but she proved to me she didn't need a nurse anymore. And that was, and she started sleeping through the night. Boom. There. And so she's been doing that since 6 months. Was it hard? It was so hard. Every little change we made was terrifying and anxiety producing. But I don't regret any of it because of the state that I was in before that all happened. And I know that this is really complicated, and I know that a lot of moms will resonate with this and a lot of people won't. But at the end of the day, it is you have to do what is right for you and your family, and we have to stop trying to please everybody and every parenting style and every sleeping style, because I have people who have done cried out and it was what had to work for them in the moment because they were suffering from severe postpartum depression. I've had people who never had to do anything with their kid, but gosh darn it, and they laid their kid down and 5 minutes later the kid was asleep and started sleeping through the night at 8 weeks. Like that really does happen apparently. And then I've had people who have, you know, co-slept and they love that and they're still co-sleeping and they can't imagine another way of life. And that was not for me. And I'm not going to go into why, but it just was not for me. So, you know, no matter what everybody was saying was the best solution, it's really just about working with your kid and getting the help that you need if you need it. I went through like a workshop and that was so helpful for me because to me it was education. I needed education on how to work with my kid. And so I think that I never got a sleep coach, but I feel like I did get coaching through that experience. You need to learn about sleep regressions. You need to know about sleep associations. You need to know that it's not going to be easy, right? And so that you're not expecting your kid to just all of a sudden one day start sleeping through the night. And I think that some of us hit rock bottom when we get this hard lesson of, yes, our kids are very important to us and we want the absolute best for them and we love them more than life itself. Like there, it is a love that you will never be able to describe and a feeling of, you know, just it's amazement, right? But at the same time, you are not irrelevant in this scenario and you have to put yourself first in certain situations. You absolutely do. And I think that this is one of those situations where you're crumbling, your health is crumbling, your mental health is crumbling, and you have to put yourself first in these situations and know that your kid is loved, your kid's going to be taken care of throughout her life, and that you're going to love her hard. But in order to love her hard, you've got to be able to work through this and support yourself through this. And this is not going to be the first of the situations that come up, right? We can see this all over the place. If you start to see, it's like you see people who eventually, you see families who make decisions that sacrifice their total emotional and mental health. And then you see families who try to create balance, whether that be we're putting limits on the amount of extracurricular activities we're doing, we're homeschooling, we're not homeschooling. Like you can see people make the decisions that are right for them. And that allows there to be so much more balance in the families. And I feel like I pride myself on studying other people. And I do feel like, you know, that's kind of the end goal for me is always to have more balance so I can be more present. So that was a very, very, very long explanation of all of the sleep stuff, but hopefully that helps. And if, you know, you're not a mom yet and you do struggle, well, when you do struggle with sleep, because it's all very confusing, you know, save this episode and listen to it. I'm going to link to Conscious Baby. And I know Liz has done an interview on her Balance Bites podcast with Eliza. And I think it's so powerful and so helpful. So please, I'll link to that in the show notes. And I will link to the workshop that I went through, the woman, the holistic sleep coach. Y'all, if you need a sleep coach, do not hesitate to spend the money on that, because that is worth more than gold if you find the right person to team up with and somebody can be there encouraging you to make the shifts. It's just like finding a functional medicine practitioner to figure out your own health. It's just like teaming up with a therapist to help your mental and emotional health. This is just as important for your health. All right. Question number two is from Allie. Hi, Stephanie and Noelle. I love your podcast and I've been listening to it since becoming pregnant last July and has helped me find balance in paleo eating. Before pregnancy, I had been on strict Whole30 for about a year, but being neurotic about it, not eating any dried fruit, very few nuts, because I tend to, in quotations, overeat. I put that in quotes because, as I said, it was neurotic and I was probably restricting too much. I was hitting the gym 5 to 7 times a week for 1.5 to 3 hours at a time. I loved it. Actually felt awesome, believe it or not. When I became pregnant, that changed a lot, and your podcast has helped me find love and acceptance for myself when I can't hit the gym or stick to a strict diet. So thank you. My baby is almost 3 months old, and I'm struggling with pretty severe postpartum depression. Absolutely love my baby, but everything else in my life seems completely unmanageable. cause for constant crashing and crying. I know, especially for me, that this is just as much, if not more, biological than mental. I am working very closely with a naturopathic doctor and a therapist to treat the depression, but both are taking different approaches to the situation. She says she's having a period every 2 weeks. PMS is definitely aggravating her mood. Gut is not in a good place. I returned to work and often after I crash when I get home. My baby's still thriving. She is in the well-healthy range, crushing her milestones. I had blood work done. Fasting insulin and thyroid function were both great. Magnesium and iron as well as white blood cell counts were all very low. I am now supplementing for the magnesium iron, taking herbs to help regulate my period and 5-HTP for mood. I also take 200 milligrams of cod liver oil and herbs for breast milk supply. My doctor recommends supplements as well as walking, socializing more, sticking to a paleo-ish diet. My therapist recommends an antidepressant that is safe to take while breastfeeding. My concerns is that antidepressants will mess with my hormones and gut health further and put me in a worse place than I am now. I also don't want to lose the moments of joy I do have with my daughter. However, the depression is pretty debilitating. What would you recommend? Any insider suggestions are much appreciated. Thanks for all you do.
Considering she asked for insight. I thought she said insider suggestions. I was like, well, I definitely have less postpartum experience than Noelle. I will say that if your doctors assure you that whatever antidepressant they're prescribing is safe while breastfeeding, they tend to be very rigorous about safety standards for breastfeeding and pregnancy and the like. And so I think that's trustable. Whether it will mess with your hormones and gut health, it's a possibility. You know, they do definitely change your neurochemistry, but you can, if you find that you're suffering ill effects from a particular antidepressant, you can try another one. Many people have tried a few different ones before they find one that feels good for them. And, you know, I don't think antidepressants are sometimes they're a good long-term solution, but often not. You know, we want to build our bodies to be as robust as possible so they can take care of themselves. But I do think as a short-term solution, if the depression is really like in the way of you doing these things, then yes, it can be helpful. You know, it's common practice among psychologists or psychiatrists to prescribe something that will get somebody like activated enough to take care of themselves and take care of their children or whatever they need to. And so if you're struggling to take care of yourself, then I actually think that this kind of intervention could be really useful. You know, okay, you use the word debilitating. Yes. Then in this case, I think it could be pretty useful and that can help you keep things going while you get everything else in line. And if this is secured, you know, secured is safe for your breastfeeding, then you can also at the same time, you know, supplement with some probiotics. Make sure you're eating lots of fermented food to protect your gut health and just keep an eye on your hormones. And I'm a firm believer that meds can be really helpful, you know, sometimes. And I honestly think it's worth a shot.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, if I'm saying, oh well, do we want to really worry about your gut health, or do we want to worry about whether or not you feel like you want to kill yourself? I'm going to choose that you take the medication, and I don't think it's not just taking. You don't have to just take medication, right? And I know that was harsh, but like this is what postpartum depression is. This is what depression is in general. I know that we know lots of things about neurological function and gut health and how it connects to the brain. But if you are suffering clinically from depression and you cannot cope and you're having a very hard time managing it, like you said, then I do not question taking the antidepressants. And it's not that is not the only thing that you can be doing. You can be doing that as well as working with your naturopathic doctor to take, making sure, of course, like clearing that with your doctor, but taking any sort of extra supplements, you know, making sure that you do have sufficient magnesium levels and that you are full of fat-soluble vitamins, that you are eating high-quality foods. That's fine too. Great. That you're working on sleep, that you're working on stress management, that you are eating really wonderful probiotic foods, you're taking a probiotic supplement, like you can be working on those things together. It's not one or the other. And I think that that's the mentality here, which is we have made, in the holistic health world, we have made taking a pill like an antidepressant a failure. And that we should really be just continuing to pursue this thing over here, which is nutrition harder and therapy and, you know, which is great, right? Therapy is great. Nutrition is great. All that stuff is great. But if you're doing that and it's not working and you still feel like you're trapped and you can't cope, do not have any shame about taking an antidepressant for a period of time. It doesn't mean you're going to take it forever, right? And it's likely that it's not because you are struggling with postpartum depression. And I know you heard all the things that we talked about in my episode with Claire. But I feel like this is still a thing. And like I've mentioned before, I just can't read another story about a woman taking her life because she suffered from postpartum depression and and she didn't tell anybody because she was so ashamed of it. Like, I just can't do it anymore. Like, that, if we have something, if we have a pill that really does, I have friends who are taking, you know, antidepressants, and it's completely changed their lives and their ability to cope and to, like Stephanie said, take action on moving forward with taking care of themselves in a way that they could not before. And so, yes, if you feel like you're at a point, my advice 100% is to take the antidepressants that are safe for breastfeeding and to continue working with your naturopathic doctor to do all the things to change your life in a way that takes care of you more and supports your mental and emotional health. And I'm not going to beat the dead horse. I feel like I've said this a lot, but that is my end stance. And we have to stop shaming people for moving towards medication in these really desperate situations. It's does absolutely no good. This podcast is brought to you by Thrive Market, an online marketplace on a mission to make healthy living easy and affordable for everyone. Thrive Market is like Whole Foods, Amazon Prime, and Costco combined. You can shop for thousands of health foods and natural products, including non-GMO foods, snacks, vitamins, supplements, eco-friendly cleaning supplies, baby and kids items, and so much more at 10 to 50% below retail prices. They can offer these prices because they cut out the middleman and ship products directly to you. They also have their own Thrive Market brand, which offers everything from organic virgin coconut oil to grass-fed collagen peptides, all the way to eco-friendly, chlorine-free disposable diapers, which my daughter wears, by the way, at incredibly affordable prices. To get 25% off your first purchase, head over to thrivemarket.com/wellfedwomen. That's 25% off on top of the discounts you already get on Thrive Market. Head over to thrivemarket.com/wellfedwomen. Last question. Hi, I've noticed recently that both my oldest kids and I do really well on a daily probiotic. We started it to treat occasional loose stools / diarrhea per the suggestion of our pediatrician. The girls were taking a multivitamin gummy that contains a probiotic, but I'm super grossed out by how much sugar there is in these kids' vitamins. It's basically candy. We all eat a decent diet, so I'm not even really concerned about the multivitamin part, but they tend to have a variety of poop/tummy problems whenever they don't take it, as I do, though I usually suffer from bloating, gas, and constipation when I'm off of them. Could you recommend any other brands that are kid-friendly but without the sugary junk? Or if the daily probiotic is a bad idea for me or them, please let me know. I wish they were able to get probiotics from foods, but they aren't consistent fans of yogurt and don't eat pickled anything.
Okay, so I'm going to leave the probiotic recommendation to Noelle because she's more up to speed on gut health than I am usually. you're welcome. But I do want to say that I can't imagine these gummies are particularly large. You know, it's not like I don't know. They're like the size of my fingernail. How big could they be? The amount of sugar in one of these gummies, or maybe they have a few of them a day, has got to be vanishingly small. And I know that they're made out of sugar because that's how you make these little, you know, gelatin, digestible, tasty little things that kids will eat. But I cannot imagine a universe in which the amount of sugar in these gummies is actually going to be a problem for these kids' health. As a matter of fact, gut flora will like eat the sugar. That, and I'm not saying that those like don't count as calories. I'm not saying that these like that the sugar like disappears because gut flora are always interacting with things in our gut. But what I'm saying is like sugar is a food that your body digests and your gut flora interact with, and they'll probably like this. You know, consider it a tasty snack. So, I really think that if they enjoy the gummies, that they're okay. You know, it seems to me like you've got them eating really, really healthfully. And I don't know, maybe you're concerned that they'll develop a taste for refined sugar or they'll really want candies all the time. And if you're seeing that happen, then you can talk to them about it, or you can dial it back, you know, give them less or consider alternatives. But if you don't see them like developing some sort of rabid affinity for all things like sugar, then to reiterate, it shouldn't be a problem. Like, it's as much sugar as in a couple of grapes.
So in other words, don't sweat the small stuff.
Yes.
You have bigger fish to fry.
You do. And making sure that kids are nourished, you know, getting vitamins like you're doing here with these probiotics is absolutely the biggest, most important thing on the to-do list. And sugar, I would put at the pretty low at the end.
Yeah, that's really good insight. Probably not the answer you thought you'd be getting from us, but don't sweat it if it's working. I want to make recommendations too about antibiotics, because we did get a question about this and I didn't include it, but I didn't include it to read, but I wanted to include it as part of this answer is what's the protocol when, you know, your kids or you are on antibiotics. And I feel like this is still something that is not very well known, because I was just having a conversation actually recently with another mom who has been on antibiotics for like months trying to get rid of a chronic bronchitis issue. And I was like, oh, are you taking probiotics or have you taken any? And she's like, no, what's that? And I was like, woof, like it's very interesting for me where I like realize that there is still a lot of work that like there's still a lot of ways that we can help people, and things still aren't mainstream as much as we live in this bubble. When I get out of the bubble, I realize like, oh, I can really help her right now. Like, that's so cool. You know, so I feel like sometimes we come across like everybody we come across knows all the things. And so it's nice to be like, oh, cool. Like, let me make these recommendations. Anyway, so if you're on antibiotic, your gut antibiotics kill all the bacteria. And we've talked about gut bacteria quite frequently in this podcast and how important it is and how closely it is tied to your immune system. Your gut bacteria are crucial to your overall health when we're talking about chronic health conditions, and we're even talking about fighting common colds and flus. You have to have a robust gut flora. And so one of the ways that we love to talk about populating that is with eating probiotic foods and taking a daily probiotic supplement. If you or your kids are on an antibiotic, I actually personally recommend, one, just making sure that you are taking a probiotic daily at the same time, or you're eating probiotic food. So if it's you as an adult, go get a big old jar of Bubby's sauerkraut from Whole Foods and take big forkfuls. And if you're taking an antibiotic every 8 hours, 4 hours after that antibiotic, eat a bunch of probiotic foods to try to keep that gut healthy and flourishing. Take a pill probiotic on opposite cycles of the antibiotic. And then once you're done with that antibiotic, increase the amount of probiotics that you're taking. So if you take one a day, take two a day. Sometimes I've actually done two in the morning, two at night, then one at morning, two at night, then two at night, then one, then back to one at night over the course of, let's say, like a month or two. You have to do that if you take antibiotics. You have to repopulate your gut. It takes a lot of work. You can take a couple different kinds of probiotics, eat some probiotic food, all the things. With kids, I think it's just as important. There's a couple options that are really easy. For babies, there's something called Gut Pro Infant. I will link to it in the show notes. I also have it saved in my stories on Instagram. It is expensive, but lasts a very long time. It is a powder with absolutely no fillers. You can sprinkle it onto things. If you're nursing and your kid has really bad reflux, you can just put it on your nipple and your kid's going to ingest it. And Seeking Health also has one for infants. One of the things that I learned from our interview with Megan Garcia was about how important it is to include prebiotics, so things very specific food for probiotics along with the probiotics. And she recommends a Claire Labs prebiotic supplement. And she recommends giving that to your kid with probiotics, especially if they're suffering from reflux or eczema or colic. A kid-friendly Claire Labs, so it's with a K, it's K-L-A-I-R-E. Claire Labs also has a children's chewable broad-spectrum hypoallergenic probiotic for ages 2 years and older. It's got a little bit less fillers. It's not a gummy, so it's not going to be as full. If that really does bother you, I would move to this chewable. I would order it directly from Claire Labs or try to find a place where you can go buy it from the store, because it has to be refrigerated. And one of the problems with buying supplements from Amazon is you never know how old they are. You never, like, if they're supposed to be in a chill pack, most of the time the chill pack arrives very warm. So it's really important for this to remain semi-cool. So I know that a lot of grocery stores actually, like Whole Foods, has a ton of probiotics in the fridge. Claire Labs does have a kids-friendly probiotic, and I think that would be really, really helpful. And you can experiment. It's not like there's some one best kids probiotic that's going to change everything. There are different strains that work better for different situations. So if your kid's stool isn't the best, I would do a little bit of Google searching and researching, maybe on Megan Garcia's website, or maybe you can just comment on her Instagram. She's very friendly to that and will answer your questions. Like, is there a very specific strain of probiotics that will help, like, constipation or loose stools or whatever? And you can move towards trying something like that. So, but I do think that the Clara Labs chewable, that's what I would recommend. Try to get creative with probiotic foods too. You can definitely sprinkle the probiotic in their food, but you can actually put yogurt in your kids if they eat smoothies. You can do that. You can just see if they'll toy with kombucha. If there's a flavor called Watermelon Wonder from GT's, and my kid drinks that, and she gives a sour face at any other kombucha, but I do give her little sips of that. And that's truthfully the only really probiotic besides some coconut yogurt that I give her. I just do sometimes I do some sauerkraut, which she really doesn't get down. I actually mix a little bit, like a teaspoon or two of sauerkraut juice into like whatever I'm making or whatever I'm about to give her, whether that be like a mashed fruit thing or a mashed up banana, or I mix it up in, like, actually we'll mix it up with coconut butter, which sounds really weird, but it just gives it a little tang and she'll eat that. So you just got to get a little creative with what you're doing, but don't stop trying to introduce it. And for yourself and for adults, the probiotic that I love, that I recommend, that I use is called BioCult, Bio-Cult. It comes in a box and they are shelf stable, and that's what I personally take daily. I do that daily, and then I do try to integrate probiotic foods probably a few times a week. Truthfully, I would love to do it every day, but it's just I'm not that on top of it. I forget, but I don't forget to take my supplements. So there you go. I will link to all of those probiotics in the show notes. If your kids are on antibiotics, if you're on antibiotics, please remember to take probiotics after the fact and to just work with your kid to figure out what works for them. I wouldn't freak out about, you know, it being a gummy, but if you want to shift over to a chewable or something that's a powder that you can sprinkle, try it. Just give it a try. I love the Claire Labs one, but if you'd like to move to a powder, there are a couple options, you know, that are kids' probiotic stuff that you can just sprinkle over food or whatever, and that's totally fine. And you may have to experiment and see what works for your kids and what works best for their tummy troubles. Something may not work totally well, but something else may be great. So just experiment. Don't get hung up on the little things. You got bigger fish to fry, so... Anything else from you?
Nope.
Okay. For more from me, go to coconutsandkettlebells.com. For more from Stephanie, go to paleoforwomen.com. Make sure to grab our book, Coconuts and Kettlebells. It's on Amazon. And leave a review if you have purchased the book and you love it and you're making all the fun recipes. And you can follow us on the Insta at well-fed women. If you have a question, shoot it to us, wellfedwomen@gmail.com. We will talk to you next week.